pizza, 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 pizza. Society.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pizza Society. So if this is your first episode, Pizza Society is a podcast for founders. It's hosted by me, Max Wittrock. I'm from Germany, as you can tell by my accent. And if you've been listening to past episodes, you might wonder, so why is this suddenly in English? Did I miss anything? And the reason why I'm speaking English today is that my guest on today's episode, she's an American, and I wanted her to be able to understand what I'm actually saying about her. So in a few moments, I'm going to talk to Laura Rees. Laura Rees is co-founder of an advertising and branding consultancy called Rees & Rees that she co-founded with her father, L. Rees. And together, they also wrote a book called The 22 Immutable Laws of Branding. And I must say, it's not just one of my favorite marketing books of all time. I would even say it's one of my favorite nonfiction books of all time. And the reason for that is that it's just such a cool guideline of laws to follow when building a brand. And even though the book was written in the 90s, it's still very valid today. And honestly, if you're a founder, if you want to build a brand, I definitely recommend reading this book because it's just, well, a really, really cool guideline. Since English is not my native language, I think it's better to jump right into the conversation with Laura Rees, who thankfully took the time to answer my questions. We're going to talk about the book, we're going to talk about branding, and we're going to talk about what has changed since the book first came out. I think she has great advice for anyone wanting to start a brand, and this is my conversation with Laura Rees. So Laura, thank you for taking the time. This is really cool. Thank you. Just for starters, how would you explain the term branding to someone who has never heard it before?
Well, a brand is something that is not out in the real world. It actually exists in the mind. And that is the challenge, to own something in the mind. And that's what a brand can be. So it distinguishes you from everybody else. There's usually lots of people and products and other competition, if you will. A brand is what distinguishes you from everybody else out there. It's also, you know, it's what it comes from. The ranching term is when you have a bunch of cattle out there and you brand your stamp on the animal with a hot iron. Now, we don't recommend hot irons on customers. That's not a good idea. So we have tools and techniques to drive your brand into the mind of the consumer, and that's where it has power.
So what do you think about the following statement? You know, I think the internet, it makes branding kind of obsolete. It's only online marketing now that matters. Brand building, that's really a thing of the past. I do have a very strong opinion about that, but what do you think?
Well, certainly, the internet has changed a lot of things in our world, right? I think it's actually made it easier for people to find the brands they really want and to learn more about the brands that they really want. And so, while, you know, you might get on a Google search, but people are they're still ultimately making the decision. Now, is it best to be at the top of the list of a Google search? Sure. And people do have, you know, they do have faith in those results. But, you know, they do know when it's paid and they do know when it's not. And they are looking at those links to see, you know, which ones are brands they heard of, which ones are brands that have credentials or authenticity. So, sure. I mean, searching and finding brands has become easier than ever. And it has allowed smaller brands and new brands that might have had trouble with traditional distribution in the past, getting in traditional stores, they can bypass that. And they can go directly to the consumer. And those brands, I think brand building is, you know, at its peak, if you will, because you have the ability to do that without some of those traditional obstacles in the past century that might have made it more challenging.
So about the book, for me, one of the key takeaways when I read it for the first time was it takes discipline to build a brand. It means probably saying no more often than yes. And that idea really resonated with me back then, and it still does today. So would you agree that being disciplined about your branding, your marketing, is that a key message? And if so, is it still valid today?
Absolutely. It's an incredibly important element of it. I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, being first in a new category and, you know, developing something new and exciting. And that is step one, if you will. But there's also that, as you mentioned, step two, the discipline and the discipline to stay consistent over an uncomfortably long period of time, right? That we talk about, you know, in particularly when getting brands off the ground, you know, they don't take off like a rocket ship, as many people assume. They take off like a jet airplane. And if you see it, you know, it rattles down the runway. It takes 110% of power to get that sucker off the ground. And so you do need that discipline to stay focused. And that's one of our main principles here, is that brands, and the reason for focus is that's what drives your brand into the mind. It's like a sharp knife. And you need that, you know, it's human nature to want to explore and expand. And so it goes against that. But that's where the brand building happens. And that's where you see brands that take a slice, that narrow the focus, like Twitter, originally 140 characters, Instagram, you know, photos only, Facebook, you know, was just at Harvard, then just at Ivy Leagues. Those brands just stayed very narrowly focused to get themselves off the ground. Today, they're at 30,000 feet, right? And they have different challenges to stay focused and how they can expand with things like multiple brands and doing other things like that. So, but it is very key to important to know these things. And that's where, you know, the real trick, you know, you write a book called The 22 Immutable Laws of Branding and, you know, terrific, but it's knowing when to apply these laws for which situation. You can't really apply them all at once. And sometimes you have to break a rule, but you have to know when and where that's possible given your situation. And if you're, like I said, if you're, if you're shaking down the runway, or if you're at 30,000 feet, and sometimes you can afford to make a mistake and not crash the plane.
So you just mentioned breaking the rules. And honestly, I think it's one of the most difficult parts. I remember reading the book, taking notes and writing down things like, don't do too many things at once, be careful with expanding your brand too much. Well, and then Apple, they come up with phones, right? I think it's tough to know when to purposely break a law. And I would assume you get asked that a lot, but do you have any advice in that regard?
Oh, sure. Well, it's funny because the most often asked question is, when can I break the rules? I mean, people just want to break the rules. And you will find exceptions to many rules. This is not the law of gravity, right? These work, you know, we like to say, you know, 99% of the time, but, you know, there are one or two times that it doesn't work, and it usually has to depend on the category and the competition. But you Apple is a very excellent example. And for the most part, they have followed the rules to the T. You know, they did expand, you know, they were obviously computers, right? But and they did expand into phones, but they didn't launch an ordinary phone like everybody else. I mean, Nokia was, you know, the phone maker of the world, right? They launched not a dumb phone or a regular phone. They launched a smartphone. It was the first touchscreen phone. That was a revolutionary idea that at the time, everyone was connected to their CrackBerry, their BlackBerry with the keyboard. And Apple did the opposite. They got away, no keyboard. That was a really bold move. And they also, you know, gave it a new name, iPhone. They didn't call it the Mac phone. Right, which most companies would do. Dell came out with a smartphone. What did they call it? The Dell smartphone, right? You know, all of these companies came out with smartphones and they used their traditional names on them. I mean, Samsung, I mean, you can buy a Samsung phone, you can buy a Samsung washing machine, you could buy, you know, a Samsung's into everything. What's a Sony? I don't know. Sony did the same thing, computers, smartphones, you know, cameras, VCRs, DVDs, televisions. They didn't use that critical second brand. Now, some of them, you know, you might say they had a sub brand. They called it a Bravia TV, but nobody called it that, right? I mean, it was, you know, truly, there was no Macintosh on that phone. And for the most part, you know, Apple is a company name. It's not a product or a brand, right? It's the company name. And, you know, they did use it on the watch, which we didn't think was a good idea. But for the most part, each category has its own name. It's iPod, iPhone, you know, Macintosh, etc.
No, that's true. And Apple, I mean, they were already around when your book was first published in the 90s. And wow, yeah. I think it's marvelous that the book is still so on point today. And looking back at it, is there anything you would now change that you see differently now?
I don't think so. I think that the immutable laws hold true. I think some of the examples, you know, we see, and we have more examples, and I think the internet has made it more important to follow many of these rules, as a matter of fact, as competition has grown, you know, from all sides of entrepreneurs being able to launch brands without, you know, like we were talking initially, to go around the distribution. I mean, it used to be, you know, you had to get into Walmart, or you had to get into Target, or you had to get into Kroger to launch a brand. And these days, heck, you can go right to the consumer if that brand is powerful enough. And to be able to, I think, you know, more narrowly focus, because you don't have to, you know, you can be global. I think the big difference, you know, between when this book came out and today is we are a more global marketplace than ever before. I mean, the ability to buy brands and know brands from around the world is remarkable. And that has, you know, because of the internet, just increased incredibly rapidly. And that's where you get, you know, what we call the mushy middle, the brands that, you know, aren't truly local, they're not truly global, they're not truly focused on anything, you know, really have issues. And what you do see, I think, that is tremendously frustrating, because, you know, the research and the books we've written and others, you know, the dangers of line extension, putting one brand name on everything. Like we talked about, what's a Sony? I don't know. I mean, what's a Bud Light? I don't know. Is it a Bud Light Arita? I mean, they've got so many different flavors and seltzer, Bud Light seltzer. Really? Are you kidding me? I mean, Bud Light was watered down. Now this is just truly water. And they continue to do that, particularly at large companies, as, you know, they're challenged with their brands eroding very quickly and, you know, scrambling, thinking, you know, one more line extension will save them. But, you know, in the long run, it's just doing way, way more harm than good.
So you were mentioning global brands, and I think a lot of founders out there dream of one day having or running a global brand. But in the beginning, when there's really limited budget most of the time, you're alone in your office, you're reading the book and you think, well, it makes sense. I know I have to be disciplined, but there's this really cheap store around the corner that wants to sell my premium product and they promise me lots of exposure. So what's your advice in that regard? Would you rather focus and be disciplined, or do you just have to go for opportunities like that at some point?
Well, that it's a really, really great question, because you really, as a company owner, you do need somebody, the chief executive, in charge of saying no.
Yeah.
And the reason where you get into trouble, and I think it comes from, you know, the kindness of human nature, is that you want to please your customers. It's, you have customers coming and asking, oh, please, or, you know, the consumers really want seltzer and they love your brand, Budweiser. Can't you come out with a seltzer? Or, you know, we really want you to, you know, expand and offer more services from you. And we really, you know, from your software company, we really want it from you. Can you add this and do that? And if you're an airline, Southwest Airlines, oh, please, we have pets. Can we take our pets on your plane? Well, Southwest is a great example. They said no, no seat mm-hmm. assignments, no pets, no inner airline baggage, no food. Forget it. No. But because they were able to say no, they were super, you know, focused and disciplined and consistent on, you know, picking the routes, having the low prices, you know, many things that people appreciated them for. And then that they understood it. You know, they didn't go after the business routes and they stayed focused. So it is incredibly challenging. And what you have to think is, instead of being customer focused, if you try to please the customer, all the time without, you know, having the brand, you know, a mission and motto in mind, you're likely to quickly become expanded and unfocused. Instead, you have to be competitor oriented. And the key, remember, with branding is to be different, to be differentiated. So in the airlines, all the other airlines had, that you want first class? Sure, we got first class. You want coach? Sure, we got coach. You want super cheap seats? Sure, we got that. We'll sell you a seat at any price you want, as a matter of fact. I mean, great, you give them all that choice, but the customer says, you're ripping me off, right?
Yeah,
you want
true.
To feel, stupid in first class or be, stuck back in coach, miserable. They offered the customer everything they wanted, but they made them mad and they didn't stand for anything. And it allowed, Southwest to truly be different. So, always think about what is my competitor? How am I going to maintain, in a sense, my difference? And sometimes that does then require a second brand. That's where we, talk, specifically about that for Procter & Gamble. It's not that they have one name on everything. It's they've got separate names for something. You've got Pampers and you got Depends, right? The adult diaper and the kid diaper. You wouldn't want to have one name on both, even though it's the same product, right? You see where multiple brands can be very helpful.
So we're back at Apple and thinking differently, being different most of the time seems like a good idea in branding. And thanks again, Laura, for a great book. Thank you so much for taking the time for this interview. And my last question would be, is there any new book on the horizon? Anything coming?
Well, yeah, we've talked a lot about, obviously our key principle here is positioning, right? Positioning was the original book Al wrote back in the idea in the 70s and the book in 81, positioning the battle for your mind. And so we have actually, it's been launched in China, a big market for us, and we're now rolling it out around the world. But the positioning for the 21st century, reinforcing the rules that, really are evergreen and continue to remain important. And then some new ones, as we've seen the changing global society in particular, and in one element that we've added that's not really in the Immutable Laws book or positioning is the importance of a visual to help drive the idea in the mind. You see the importance of the lime, for example, on the top of the Corona beer to drive in the authenticity of it being a Mexican beer or the original contour bottle of a Coca-Cola bottle. Using a visual or, Colonel Sanders for KFC, using a visual to drive in and, not just to be attractive and to be unique or, out there, but to drive in an idea. And if you can link those two, you own a word in the mind is the idea for building a brand. You drive that word into the mind with the power of a visual hammer.
Well, thank you so much, Laura. That was great advice from a true branding legend. All the best for you. And thanks again. This was really cool for me.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's great to be here.